So Kyle, we finally got it. We finally got a movie where the title song is sang or
Is
performed or
performed
well, we
or
shouldn't say performed, right? We
played?
played, yes.
Played in the movie.
And it's right away.
Yeah, we've come close with like trailers playing the songs, but this is the first film
So
which in which the title is a song and is played in the movie.
what are they?
My boyfriend's back.
Money for Nothing too.
Money for Nothing.
Right, and later will be Boogie Nights. But this one, we finally get it. So come on, Kyle. It's tradition.
Really?
You're gonna sing it.
Oh my God,
We
I
know
wish
you
I
want
have it.
to.
When a man loves a woman, I don't know the other
No one
words.
does! No one does! The whole time I'm watching the movie, I'm like singing that song and then just trying to figure out what the second lyric is, right? You mumble it, right?
Yeah.
And then what's the next lyric you know in the song?
Iggy Pop! Amen! Let it rock! I'm a fucking idiot.
Red meat, we crave sustenance.
I'm an artist.
Hello, my name is Truman Capote.
Why don't you have some fun?
Fun,
Tommy, that's a cape thing.
Whoever she is, I'm gonna find her and I'm gonna hurt her.
I've spent the past 3 years learning Finnish.
I'm always home, I'm uncool.
This is a process of dehypnotization.
Shut up!
Hi again, and welcome to this week's edition of the P.S. I Love Hoffman podcast, our love letter to the remarkable career of the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm your host, Brian Rodriguez.
And I'm Kyle Reinfried.
We're always home, we're always uncool, and we're always ready to talk great movies.
Woo!
So we got a interesting movie this week,
yeah.
Kyle.
1994's When a Man Loves a Woman. You've heard me sing it, at least.
One
like,
more time, one more time
no,
for the
I
road.
Can't.
Come on.
No, Percy Sledge. Like that's the man who sings it.
Doesn't Michael Bolton sing it?
Percy
I
Sledge
know, I
is
know.
The man who sings it.
Michael Bolton does have a very famous version.
Sure, I'm happy.
Yeah,
it's the Percy Sledge version that we hear.
Yes, the Percy Sledge version is the first thing we hear in this film.
Yeah, I love the opening of this film, kinda.
So this film is a little bit heavy.
Yes. Okay. Should we just start off by saying? I mean, we're a couple of lighthearted, jokey guys on this podcast, but this is some, you know, sensitive story here.
Yeah, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm assuming you've heard our other episodes. I don't know if you just drop in on this one randomly, but if you do,
thank you.
Yes, so, welcome. Yeah, we usually like to keep it light and fresh.
Yeah.
However, today's episode,
it deals with addiction specifically. The main character is addicted to alcohol. But it also it rings a little close to home. I know I've experienced it, but also, I mean, our podcast is about a man who unfortunately lost the battle of his addiction to drugs.
So you've experienced it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to get into it, but family members. Sure.
Oh, family members! I thought you meant yourself. I'm like, I didn't know this chapter of your life.
No, I'm lucky enough that my enjoyment of alcohol hasn't gotten out of hand.
Gotcha. I mean, we won't ask for specifics, obviously.
Yeah.
In your life, but this is something that I'm not accustomed to. I don't personally think I know any alcoholics. I guess suffering alcoholics. Anyone could be an alcoholic, right? Mm. So this is a little bit foreign to me, but I understand. I mean, enough. I've seen enough of the world to understand addiction.
Yeah, I mean this. So something I read about this is that, you know, it was pretty well received, but a big thing was a lot of people said that it was sensitive material and they didn't like it because it was just too, like, you know, just struck a chord that they've experienced, and I can only, you know, like, I'm not married, and there's no one in my core family. It's not like I was around it, like how Andy Garcia and Meg Ryan as a couple are, you know, dealing with this.
Yeah, and I think, let's touch on the film. I think this is one of those films that, while it's not like Oscar level,
yeah,
clearly, I don't know if that was what they're going for. It's possible. It's in that second tier.
It was released in like the spring, so I know nowadays it's like Oscar bait is fall time. So.
Yeah, I'm not sure back then.
Yeah.
If you look at the nominees back then, it doesn't always follow that.
Yeah.
But it's one of these second-tier films that it's just like a heavy drama that's not necessarily the Oscar contention. Though I think Meg Ryan does a great job.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, the critical consensus as well.
Yes. She was very much praised for her depiction of someone, you know, as an alcoholic.
Yeah, and back to what you said, I think that maybe where this movie, for lack of a better word, misses, is that it is in that in-between niche, where it is a heavy subject, but it doesn't take it 100% serious, because it's still a little popcorn-y, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, just like when you're trying to make something, in the end of the day, like still like entertaining, and obviously like not like just like an art house film, you're gonna fall into that awkward territory of just like how far can we, should we push it?
Yeah, and in 1994, I doubt they're saying let's make an art house film with Meg Ryan. I mean, she was super hot at the time.
Yeah, literally and figuratively. And figuratively.
You a Meg Ryan fan back in the day?
She's right in my dream. I was about to say wheelhouse. That wouldn't be true. Right in my dream wheelhouse.
But yeah, I mean, she's Sleepless in Seattle. She had done with Harry Met Sally. Not You Got Mail Yet, which one of my guilty pleasures.
Yeah.
I like Dogs. I like the Upper West Side. I like Tom Hanks. What can I say?
Tom Hanks was almost the lead in this film, but so was Deborah Winger, who was in Leap of Faith that we've covered.
Oh, wow.
So
really?
So
it was Hanks Winger.
Hanks Winger, Garcia, that became Garcia, Ryan.
That's interesting.
I don't know. It says, like, you know, that those two were attached and they dropped out or they whatever happened, but I'm curious if like it was like, I think he would have, I mean, obviously he clearly worked with her, with Meg Ryan again, and worked with her twice before, so maybe we would have gotten, maybe this would have been the,
what do you call a four trilogy?
Well, is it a
no, it's not a real trilogy, but what do you call it? I don't know. Right,
I don't know.
It would just be, instead of the Joe versus the Volcano trilogy,
it just becomes a saga then.
Yeah, I guess it's the Joe versus the Volcano saga. This would have been a very, very darker.
Yeah. Well, this, I guess it's fitting because it's like kind of in the middle.
Side Meg Ryan film things of the Joe versus the Volcano trilogy. Uh-huh. What's the lightest one?
The lightest one? Probably Joe versus the
Volcano. I would say so, right?
Just because it's like a really odd sense of humor. And then I would have went with,
You've Got Mail's definitely number two there.
Yeah, but at the same time, a woman loses her business.
I know, but like Sleepless in Seattle is like,
To be honest, I haven't seen either in such a long time.
True, so fair.
I can't.
You can tune into our Meg Ryan podcast.
Yeah.
After we finish this one, Kate and Leopold.
That's a guilty pleasure of mine.
See,
Leif Schreiber's in there.
Oh, is he?
Breckenmeyer.
Leif Schreiber and
Hugh Jackman, Wolverine, and Sabretooth.
One of the Sabretooths. He was a good Sabretooth, but not a good movie.
No, not a good movie.
Different podcast.
Anyway.
So, just FYI, like you mentioned, before we tell everyone what this is about, we kind of have touched on it, but we do like to hear your beautiful words. Like you said, it was highly praised, or praised enough, 71% on Rotten Tomatoes, mm-hmm. which is pretty good for us.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of our higher-rated films so far.
We're definitely going to get ones that are like up there.
Oh, of course, of course. But we like to see a good movie, you know?
Yeah, and unfortunately, Philip Seymour Hoffman doesn't show up until like an hour in the movie, and then he just has like two very, very brief scenes, and I was really like, I called it, like I totally, when we like knew that this was a movie about addiction, like I'm not trying to make a joke here, because like I said, you know, like, you know, he battled addiction as well, but I just had a feeling he was going to be someone through her like, you know, therapy and through her rehab, you know, encounters.
Yeah, so unfortunately we won't get too much of Philip Seymour Hoffman today on the podcast, which always breaks our heart.
Yeah, last week you got a lot of clips from The Yearling. This week you're just going to get,
literally, we'll probably include
two lines.
His two lines in the film. He's a pivotal character, but I feel like he should have been more pivotal, but we'll get to that later.
Might have to play, you know, there's some really good dramatic chops in here between Garcia and Ryan, so just like Scent of a Woman, obviously not Pacino level, but we'll play a nice little dramatic clip for you at some point.
So, Kyle, we've dissected it a little bit. Mm-hmm. tell us what this film is about in your pre-produced words.
Michael, played by Andy Garcia, and his wife Alice, played by Meg Ryan, are forced to face the consequences of her alcoholism when her addictions threaten her life and the life of their daughters. From detox and rehab to moving back home, Michael and Alice must come to terms with how their lives and their relationship have changed.
Good, that was nice, that was nice.
Thank you.
So let's get into the cast, basically. We've talked ad nauseam about Meg Ryan.
Yeah, so, I mean, the four major players in this movie are Alice, Meg Ryan, Michael, Andy Garcia.
Andy Garcia, and then from, right, like, The Godfather 3.
Godfather 3, and one of my favorite films, Untouchables.
Untouchables, yeah. I mean,
his chemistry with Sean Connery in that movie is
I'm a big Andy Garcia fan. Like, I wish he did more stuff. I mean,
and him in the Ocean's films are really good.
Yeah, he is. And it's funny because, look, The Godfather 3 kind of gets shit on.
I always say this. Godfather 3, as just like, if the first two Godfathers didn't exist, Godfather 3 wouldn't be, like, shit on nearly
No. It followed two of the best films ever.
Yeah.
Years later, you know?
Like, critic and fan and award recognition.
However, I always felt like one of the best arcs in the film was his, and he does a great job with that. Like, not the whole thing with the daughter, you know, but like...
Yeah, well, that was just a, whatchamacallit for Sofia Coppola.
Yeah, Sofia Coppola. But, I mean, she's accomplished much as... behind the scenes. Him on the horse dressed as a cop, and he shoots, I forgot who it is, Armand or Santi, is it? Something like that. I mean, I thought he was very good in that film, and he's pretty much good in whatever I've seen him in. I'd never seen this film. Had you seen this film before this?
No, I have not.
So, first time for both of us. Who are you going to say the other...
And then, so, you know, they're, like, the two main characters. But the next is their daughters.
Their daughters, yeah.
So they don't really go into this, but Meg Ryan had a daughter
before. Yeah, they mentioned it, because she...
I mean, they don't go into it.
Yeah, we don't know...
like, it's not like we meet that guy.
That dad. No, but it is, like, there is
one
an element.
We thought maybe because the older daughter, Jess, is like, you know, like, oh, I'll call... When she's upset at one point, she's like, well, I'll call my dad, because she calls Andy Garcia Michael.
Yeah, so basically Andy Garcia...
Which is interesting, because she's going to go an eight-year-old dance, so I remember she's 8 years old in the film.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little complicated, but he's definitely, like, the father figure in her life.
Yeah, for at least He marries...
4 years. It starts 4 years after their marriage. So, at least maybe five, if they...
Yeah, because the one daughter's 4 years old, so...
So he marries into this... her with a daughter...
Yeah.
Pregnant with
Alice has
his
Jess already.
Biological
and then,
daughter, yeah.
Yeah, and then they get married. The movie begins with what you think is going to be like their meet cute, but I had a feeling. I was like, this isn't
real. Too prepackaged.
It was, yeah exactly. They, a little interesting fact, I thought, I wouldn't say, you know, like when I read trivia online, sometimes it just has like a fact, like not about the movie, but like a place that they shot or something.
Yeah.
But I thought, since it's a film about alcoholism, I thought this was kind of an interesting fact. And it's that the opening scene is, so the film takes place in San Francisco.
Yeah.
Starts off
beautiful
with
city.
The song.
Have you
beautiful
been?
City.
Yes.
Yes.
One of our favorites on the podcast.
You know, get to see the Golden Gate in the background. You see the trolleys. And then they're right at the, what is that called? The Fisherman's Wharf area.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're at the Buena Vista Cafe, which is like a very old, you know, lasting establishment in San Francisco. And it's the first... place, the Irish coffee was invented
wow.
in the
1950s. Interesting.
So just...
Irish coffee was invented in San Francisco
yes.
in the 1950s? Wow.
Yeah.
You don't think anyone ever tried that before?
I mean, like, I guess as far as, like, labeling it...
Like
there,
a menu
like, yeah.
item, yeah.
Yeah. So, I just thought that was, number one, beautiful city, good drink, and it's, you know, apropos given that it's a film about alcoholism.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's a good fact.
Yeah, thank you.
So like you said, they have this meet cute, and yeah. it's...
First, so a guy is hitting on her, and I recognize...
Who is this guy? Who is this guy?
His
tell
name
me.
Is Stephen Brill.
I was like, Kyle's going to tell me who this guy
big
is.
Big-time Adam Sandler collaborator. He directed a bunch of Sandler films, too. Like Little Nicky and a lot of his current Netflix stuff.
Oh, really?
He's acted in a couple... Like, he was like...
So where do I know him from? Like... What film do you know?
Oh, okay. He's one of, as far as like one of his bit, quote unquote, bigger roles, especially in an Adam Sandler movie. He's one of the douchebag friends in The Wedding Singer when they run into them during like his bachelor party.
Oh yeah, yeah, okay, I definitely remember.
And he's
that.
Like, yeah, didn't your parents die? And then like even he just has small bit role, like in Mr. Deeds when like he rents out Madison Square Garden. He's just like got an Italian accent. And he's like, you're gonna like what I play.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Like that. The point being, this guy's hitting on Meg Ryan.
To me, he's like a poor man's Bruno Kirby.
Yeah.
Okay. I think from When Harry Met Sally.
True. Well, it's appropriate mention. But then, so he's hitting on her, Meg Ryan's having nothing of it. But then Andy Garcia comes over, and he's just got this whole bit of, he's a pilot, and he's got a flight that he's got to make, and if she could pick up his laundry, I'm like, ooh, boy, just even that is just feels sexist.
It feels sexist. It feels weird. But then when it starts working, you're like, huh? And that's when, to me, I'm like, no, this can't be real.
Just like right away, I was like, is this something? Like, I was like,
well, I didn't know if it was just a crappy film.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, no, that's a good point. But then, like, and then she eventually, like, straddles him. And at that point, she doesn't, like, wave it to the guy, but I saw, like, a ring on the finger.
Yeah.
And he's just like, oh, said something about breakfast or something in the morning.
I don't know. It just makes
it clear
that it's they're married.
And like, and then the Stephen Brill's character just turns and hits on the woman to like his
It's like a little like cute little gag thing. Pretty soon after, we get to meet the daughters in this family's lives.
Two child actors, very good in this movie, and they're child actors that moved on.
That are both at least were somewhat active.
Yeah, still no, still active.
Still, I would say the second one more.
But. So Jess, the older daughter, she's played by Tina Majorino, who is, as a child actor, was in, obviously, this film, but then Waterworld and Andre.
Andre, one of your favorites.
Yeah. It's very sad. I remember when Andre gets cut and there's seal blood all over the place.
Ooh.
Hmm. I'm hungry. Anyway, and then
I love how that touched you more than the film about alcoholism.
And then as an adult, I mean, it's been a while now. She was in Napoleon Dynamite, then she was in the show like Big Love.
Yeah, she's a Big Love.
So she's still around.
Yeah, and yeah. Then, I actually think she's really great.
Yeah, and this was her first role ever.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah, and then. Then I'm assuming this. I didn't see this as a fact for this actress, but then the younger daughter, Casey, played by Mae Whitman, I would assume she's much younger even than Tina, so I would assume this was her first role too. But I just didn't see anywhere confirming that.
Yeah, I mean it's possible. It's one of her first roles for sure.
Yes, and so then moving on as a child, she's the daughter in Independence Day.
Yes,
and then as an adult. Her biggest thing is like Arrested Development.
Yeah, and Egg.
Yeah, Egg. One of your favorites, right?
Yes.
With the show.
Well,
I don't know about
earlier.
Her.
I like her.
Well, she was replaced, right?
She replaced somebody.
She
definitely
somebody.
Like the better version, though.
Yeah.
But better/worse, she's funny.
Yeah, and then she's been some other things.
She's also in Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah, and she's also in this one film called The Duff, which I think, I'm like, how did that title get released? I find it offensive.
I've never seen the film. I've heard it's good, but like
but it's like,
why is it an offensive
Duff,
title?
Duff is like an acronym for like dumb ugly friend or something.
Really?
Like
I didn't know that. Yeah. Wow. Maybe I'm the Duff and I just didn't know. No, I
not
figured
my Duff.
No, I figured. I mean, I see you have a Duff beer can on your desk.
Yeah, no, that's from The Simpsons.
I was like, is it like a Simpsons in joke? I don't know. She was also a star on that show Parenthood, and I'm like, my mother watched it. I didn't watch it, but NBC, she's a Lauren. She's another Gilmore Girls kind of reference. She's Lauren Graham's daughter on that show. So
we're like destined to just constantly talk.
We need to have a Gilmore Girls podcast. We need to watch it first of all. I just know that too because she was in, again, not that I watched it, I kind of watched a little of it. She was in the Gilmore Girls new one on Netflix a little cute, like, oh my god, both her daughters are here. That wasn't the plot, but you know.
Oh, I see.
So I mean,
I want these two actresses to team up. I think they've got, like, they would have some.
Yeah, they had some nice chemistry. I wonder if they've, like, talked since then. I'm sure they have.
That'd be interesting.
But I've always been, since the rest of the film, I've always been a Mae Whitman fan.
Mm.
So obviously she's much different as a child.
Yeah.
Regardless,
But this film, so like, you know, like good opening, but then right away they like, again, not to be like cutesy with alcoholism, but like so the next scene after that, then they're celebrating their anniversary. I think it's their fifth anniversary.
Yeah, this is fourth, I think. Okay. And this is a very like, I don't know, just side note, like they're very like sexual couple. I don't know if that's related.
Well, it's Andy Garcia.
Maybe. But they have like a, we'll just say they have a very healthy sex life.
Yeah.
Because there's that that line like, it's one of the opening lines that's in the trailer where they're just watching home videos and this is where you see that the younger daughter is like, Meg Ryan was pregnant during their marriage.
Yeah.
And she's like, how did I get in there? Like, because...
And then
Andy Garcia says, that's on a whole other set of videos.
Yeah, and then, like, Jess, the older daughter, says, we're not allowed to watch those videos. So I'm like, wait a minute. Number one, like, they videotape themselves having sex. And number two, their daughter knows of this?
Yeah, whoa.
Like, knows of this?
So, first of all, yeah, I mean...
Hot. No, sorry.
I mean, like, in all seriousness, there's a lot of chances for her to get, like, screwed up in this film, but that's probably one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just weird. That just struck me as weird.
It's a lot for an 8-year-old to take in.
I guess, but again, it's probably written in for, like, us in the theater to laugh. Like, ha ha ha.
One of the only lighter moments in this movie.
Fair. Very fair.
But even when... So Meg Ryan, they're leaving, and they've got this, like, Asian nanny who's, I think... She's pregnant at that time, too. Her name's Amy.
Amy, she's played by Lauren Tom.
Yeah, she's all... She throws some sass. She's, like, a smart gal.
Do you know... Do you recognize Lauren Tom from anywhere?
Not like off the top. I recognize her, but I can't like recognize her from something.
Friends is like the biggest example for me because you know I'm a big Friends guy. She's Ross's girlfriend in season two. Yeah.
Oh.
What was her name? Julie.
Okay.
Yeah, she's Julie. She's also in like the Joy Luck Club and some other things. She had like
saw
a little.
She always wanted to. just never sat down and popped in the Joy Luck Club.
She has a little bit of like a moment there. So, obviously in this film, like, she's pretty as Julie, and this one they kind of, like, put big glasses on her and a big dress.
Yeah, made her, like, look like nerdy Asian, pregnant nerdy Asian.
Yeah.
I mean, they make her look Asian, she is Asian.
No. This isn't a yellow face film. Yeah. Lauren Tom is Asian.
But Meg Ryan walks out the, it's very subtle, but she walks out the door with a beer bottle.
Yeah, there's subtle signs, because in the first scene she's drinking,
yeah.
The second scene she's drinking, but we're not recognizing it as that yet.
But I mean, since I watched the trailer and like did a little research, I knew it was a film, you know, of like alcoholism. So I was like, oh, foreshadowing. It's not really foreshadowing because, man, do they just jump into this into the film? They're at dinner, very lovely dinner, and you know they exchange gifts and they had like a don't go over like $20 thing, but he clearly does with a lovely necklace, and they dance, and then they get home. And she's drunk. She's like, he's supporting her. But it's like, seems like, oh, we're just having fun or whatever. And she, like, you know, like, is kind of like carrying her and puts her on the bed. Then she slides off of it. And then earlier in the film, we're introduced to this Porsche that's alarms going off.
Yeah.
Like, oh, the Porsche again. And now the Porsche is going off in the early mornings. And she's screaming out, saying, like, people are trying to have sex up here. And it's like, oh, ha, ha, ha.
And it's clear here that this isn't just like she got drunk on her anniversary and she drank too much. It's clear that he says, like, I'm getting a little tired of, like, picking you up off the floor or something.
Yeah. And
this is something she does.
Yeah, and then she goes outside, just makes a pit stop at the refrigerator. She goes outside with like a bunch of stuff, but only then takes the eggs and starts whipping them at this Porsche, and then gets on top of it and like kind of like sits on it and does a whole like batter, like, or you know, like playing the catcher, and has Andy Garcia, and you see like his face, but then like he's clearly like in denial, but then just pretty much like goes along with it. And starts throwing eggs at the cars as well.
Yeah, because he doesn't know the level of her... neither do we. But like he doesn't know the level of her alcoholism at this point.
Yeah. But at the same time, it's just like... You're both clearly, like, you know, successful. Like, have a nice home in San Francisco. You've got two daughters that are asleep upstairs. Don't throw eggs at a car.
No. I mean, that's obvious. But we see that as, like, a nice little aha moment, kind of.
And this one... To go along with... one of your earlier comments, how like dramatic maybe it can be, like, did they go far enough, you know, like, just how do you treat this material? This is a movie that has like cliche, not that the music is bad, but it very much like has those like music cues, like, this is how you should be feeling right now.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I wrote a note about that. Like, I think with a different soundtrack here in this scene, you might think this is a lighter moment.
Yeah.
But it's kind of a dark song playing
under
it.
Yeah, it's almost like, yeah, like, no, really, that's why I'm like, I wrote, like, oh, he's clearly in denial. Like, you see, like, this face, but it's, like, almost like a juxtaposition of, like, this light, you know, moment where you can just, like, on the inside, they're just, like, blackening, but outside they're smiling and putting up the, or at least he is, because she's very drunk. Then we find out, you know, so the next day, this is also something we see, the daughter's very intuitive, and she definitely knows something is up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, she's like that wise daughter, yeah, you know?
Older.
She's also
her years.
Known her mother longer than Michael, Andy Garcia's
character. Yeah, well,
that's
just something,
played.
Like, I know, that, like, people with, you know, like, single parents, it's obviously clearly, like, bond more, so even if she was... If she's 8 now and they've been together for 4 years, she had a solid 3-4 years that was just her and her mom.
Exactly.
And then she's a guidance counselor.
Yeah, what a position to be in with her issues. But
yeah.
I don't know. I guess it makes sense. She's trying to help other people.
Yeah.
Just to backtrack a little bit, sure. Like, I know it's kind of sounds at times that we're, like, ripping the screenplay, and I'm not sure the screenplay is, like, the issue. Again, I don't think there's an issue, because this is a fine movie to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this screenplay was written by Ronald Bass, who I knew the name, and I looked him up, and he's an Academy Award winner for writing. He wrote Rain Man.
Oh, okay.
But he wrote some of your other favorites as well. My Best Friend's Wedding.
Wow.
I know you like that
I
one.
I love that.
What Dreams May Come. I know you said that wasn't, like... the worst film.
No.
It's a creative film.
Some people really shit on that movie.
I know. And he's like a your solid Hollywood screenwriter. And yeah. he even writes till today. And co-writer is Al Franken, former SNL alum,
yeah.
Who's now a U.S. senator, which is interesting, you know.
Vote for Al Franken in the next election, if you could, ladies and gentlemen. Local Senate office. I don't know.
Minnesota? You're
Minnesota.
In Minnesota now? And the director, and we'll get into the director later.
Yeah.
But his name is, like, Luis Mandoki.
Yeah.
He's a Mexican director. Comes from, obviously, a long line of good Hollywood Mexican directors.
Mm-hmm.
But I looked at his IMDb, and he's done more Mexican
Yeah,
films.
He definitely...
acclaimed Mexican films, it
yeah.
seems like. I hadn't seen them, but we go to Mexico later in the film.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, it's one of those things, too, I think... I mentioned it before, like, in other things, like, when a director kind of has say, like, oh, can we just shoot one scene in Mexico?
He just, like, knew, like, his buddy yeah. had a good resort. But,
well,
yeah, but...
Two Latinos in this film, so, well.
Yeah, hey, there you go. Yeah, so they just kind of, they want to get away, because then she goes out for after-work drinks, but then he ends up missing a flight because of her... And Amy couldn't stay around because she had something to do or whatever. But pretty much, they go to Mexico to get away.
Yeah.
And you meet the grandma. The grandmother's played by Ellen Burstyn.
Ellen Burstyn, yes.
But, again, kind of the same as... Great actress, but the same thing as, like, PSH.
Yeah, legendary, right?
Yeah. Legendary. And same thing as, like, PSH. Like, nothing...
How many scenes? One? Two?
Technically two.
Weird, right?
And then clearly Meg Ryan has, like, problems with her mom, and then even the granddaughter's just like, don't leave me with her, like, you know.
Yeah, she doesn't, like, seem bad when we
yeah,
see her, but...
Like, grandkids are supposed to love grandparents.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
Yeah, they get away to Mexico, and just right away, you know, they're drinking, and they're on a rowboat or whatever, and she's clearly drunk, and I just would have never... I didn't see any bottles on that rowboat. I just wouldn't have gone out on a rowboat with her if she's that drunk, but she falls into the water.
No, and he's a romantic. Michael here is a romantic.
Yeah.
To be clear, it's like a Mexican resort.
Yeah, we're not like, in like...
all-inclusive pool. They're having a good time. And
yeah, we're not in like a favela.
Favela. Brazil.
Is that just Brazil?
Maybe,
okay.
I don't know. It's not a slum. No, no,
yeah.
no. It this is like a posh Mexican resort.
Yeah, because he has a big line in this scene, ringing you out at the end of an evening is less fun than it used to be, which is not just your ordinary, like, line, like, I'm getting sick of this. It's just, like, it's something heavily talked about in this film is just he's slightly an enabler and, you know, just that early magic and that fun, you know, she's a fun person.
Yeah,
but...
I wouldn't go as far as say he's an enabler.
Or, you know, just like someone that he knew something was up.
He wasn't in tune enough. Like he says
yeah.
later in the film, like he didn't listen enough.
Yeah.
One thing before we like leave this brief Mexican scene, mm-hmm. he has another weird like sex line that creeps me out.
Okay.
The weird line is like, he whispers to her, like, "I found some guy to watch us have sex on the beach." He doesn't even say tape or film.
Oh, I totally like just didn't hear that line correctly. I thought he was just saying like, "Let's." I thought he said, "Let's go have wine and sex on the beach" or something like that.
No, he said he found a guy to, and then she goes, "A local." Like, I hope they're kidding. I hope this is like that beginning
she's got
banter
a little
thing
taste for Spanish.
But like, what does she? Do they enjoy this? Because they had the videotape thing earlier.
Yeah.
I don't know. People, you're allowed to enjoy whatever you want. That's okay. It was a weird beat that they kept hitting on in the film. Like it, like you said, like the not too many light moments here, but all the light moments were about people watching them have sex. So.
Yeah, hey, whatever floats your boat.
Hey, I mean, those are, I guess, what's the good parts.
When a man loves a woman.
Yeah, when a man loves a woman, he'll pay a local Mexican.
He'll pay a local to film him on the beach having sex with his wife.
It doesn't even say film,
those
though.
Those are the next words.
Oh, those are the next words. You're right. How could I forget
that? It's just like Louie. No one knows the words.
Very true.
Yeah. So, I mean, after that, they go back home. But like the next thing is like we see that she brings a bottle. Oh, because in Mexico she says, "All right, like I promise, like no more."
Yeah, she kind of makes like.
Yeah, we know this promise is gonna be
broken. Of course, considering where we are in the film as well.
Yes, but because when she goes home, she goes outside and she brings a bottle, puts like some newspaper around it, and then tosses it in the garbage can. Then she takes like a little swig, and then she takes a. Big old swig from this, like, I'm assuming vodka. It's clear alcohol.
She says it later that she mostly drinks vodka, so that he doesn't smell it on her.
I kind of want to play the Ron Swanson line about clear alcohol right
now. It's not topical and probably at
okay,
probably off color a little bit.
All right. All right. I won't edit it in. Anyway, but then she locked herself out.
Yes.
And he has to come, rings the bell, goes down, and she just throws some line at him. But clearly, like, you just see him, and he's just like, oh, my God, like, what now? And then the next scene, she, you know, it's like the next day or whatever, she comes home drunk. Amy is there. She, like, experiences, you know, she's no dummy, so I'm sure she's experienced it before. But as far as us seeing it, this is when Amy experiences Alice drunk. She's like not sure if she should go, and she's just like, just go, Amy. And she's now like not a fun drunk, just like a bad mean drunk.
Yeah, she later says that the following scene is like her low point.
Yeah, and then she yells at her daughter about homework, and then she ends up taking pills and she's drinking, and then she hits her.
Yeah,
daughter.
She hits her daughter, and it's just like, oh my god,
it's just like,
this is the emotional crux of the film here.
Yeah.
This is where you're like, oh my god.
And then she's in a shower, and she's throwing up, and then she freaking leans against the door, and it just I'm surprised. I was expecting, because then the daughter finds, she hears it, goes in there. I was expecting to see, like, a pool of blood or something.
Yeah, there was no blood here, but she's, like, passed out on the ground, and the daughter literally
hits her head, and she's calls Andy Garcia, I guess, left a, like, emergency line, or
yeah, because, like you said, he's a pilot, so he often goes away.
Yeah, hotel or something.
And he's at, I think, an airport bar. I'm guessing the daughter must have called the airline. And the airline probably tracked him down at the airport somewhere. This is another thing
said. When I was 8 years old, I made a phone call to 911. I knew that number. I'm surprised she didn't.
Yeah, that is surprising.
Intuitive 8-year-old that she was.
But she might be intuitive enough, like, I don't know.
To know is also something that other people might not want to know.
Yeah, maybe, but she does think she's dead. I'm not sure. I mean, that's like, that moment, like, was the tear-jerking moment for me there, because it's like, you just hear the panic in Andy Garcia's voice, and like,
The panic in Andy Garcia's voice, and then Tina Majorino is like, child actor is just like, I mean, this whole film, she's really, really good. Like, she, you know, she has to do, both kids are good, but she has much more.
Yeah, I would argue, like, she has the breakout performance here. Unfortunately, Philip Seymour Hoffman's not in it enough to have it.
Yeah, he should have played the daughter.
Yeah, I'll ask you at the end, like, do you think he would have been better as the daughter?
Yeah, maybe. We see him in some dresses and Flawless, so.
True. So, next, it's a tough moment here.
She goes to the program.
It's obvious she needs to go to rehab.
Yeah. I mean, she's left there, and they're not happy about it because she can't make calls right away while she goes through deed talks and everything. Obviously, this is going to be tough for her daughters, their daughters, and he's just weighing over his head.
Yeah, the older daughter, Jess, you could tell, is trying to be the mom as well.
Yeah, she was, cooking breakfast.
She's way too young. It's so much on her. You just feel bad.
Yeah. Then the youngest daughter asks, what's an alcoholic? I'm like,
it's tough. And Andy Garcia explains that. I think he does, a good job.
He does a pretty good job, but then she turns and looks at her sister and says, what's an alcoholic?
Yeah.
And, then Jess, gives her own little explanation.
I think she does a pretty good job for
an 8-year-old,
she
does a good
too.
Job. She does more, Andy Garcia just, gives, a wide description while Jess goes and says, when, mom's in a weird mood or she's tired or blah, 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 that's, alcoholism. But it's just,
And Meg Ryan, I think here she's, at her finest acting-wise. I mean, she's never won an Academy Award or anything like that, yeah. But she's not a bad actor here.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't a Walk the Line where he's, drinking and ripping out sinks and, doing crazy things, but she's in...
No, she's in rehab. She's detox.
Yeah,
detox,
she's there sitting and angry and... I don't know if you want to call them cliches or just, the tropes or, the understand... the very face value understandings that we have of... detox and alcoholism, but that's that's what they show here, and the doctor comes in and it's just we're gonna get through this.
Yeah, she takes smoking up again, but it's almost like a trade-off here.
Mm-hmm.
And an hour into the film, Andy Garcia kind of visits her.
Yeah, it's their first visit, and he brings
with the girls, and it's a nice moment there. Yeah. You can see she's getting better, but she's not.
He meets a
perfect.
Few of her. Peers while she walks around with the girls.
Yeah, one of them is like
scary.
One of them's an armed robber, and she leaves the girls with him because she's learned to trust these people, and they've been open.
She says to him at one point, I don't know the exact line, but anything you're looking and judging them for, I'm the same as them.
And she kind of is in this group here.
Sure.
And then, like I said, we're an hour into the movie. He's visiting her, and we finally get to see Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, Gary.
Gary. He looks like a Gary.
Sure.
So I guess we'll play
this brief line. It's classic Philip Seymour Hoffman, mumbling kind of.
Yeah, we might have to turn the volume up here.
Yeah.
Gary, this is Michael.
Hi. I feel like I know you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Your wife's a very comforting person.
Yes.
Very. Do you mind if I talk to her for a second?
No. Yeah, just for a second.
Yep. I mean,
literally, that's the scene.
Yeah. We always try, whether how small, how big the roles have been so far, really talk about his, what he's done with this role, and it's not bad. But honestly, I can't say much about this role.
No, I mean, what we can talk
besides,
about
besides, I want. To see him, I mean, maybe there's another role that he goes into rehab someday. I'm very curious if he took this role because it was something.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. How he was 26 when he shot this. I'm not sure what period in his life, addiction-wise, he was in.
Yeah, no, I read up on this.
Okay.
And so, in 2006, he did a 60-minute interview, and he revealed that he engaged in drug and alcohol abuse. While at NYU, and he said, anything I could get my hands on, I liked it all. But in 1989, he was 22, and he entered rehab, and then he was sober for 23 years, and then he relapsed in 2013.
Okay, so then he definitely took this role on because he'd been there and he'd done that.
Yeah, so this is 5 years after he was in rehab.
And
so
it's personal to him. It's personal. It's probably offered to him, and he... I think before we recorded today, we discussed maybe he had some deleted scenes or something because it is very small.
Yeah. So not to jump ahead, we'll talk about it a little bit more. But then the next interaction we have with him, he's at Alice and Michael's house, and Michael has this whole suspicion kind of thing, pretty obvious.
Yeah, I mean, it starts with this scene we just played that he's not sure.
Yeah. Because everyone, she's very attractive, and clearly, he felt that Alice was like a fun woman and there's like a magic to her, and that's what maybe why he fell in love with her. And so that's just what a lot of these people, particularly the guys, are experiencing and mentioning to Michael while he's walking around, like, oh, she's such a great woman. And, you know, I mean, it's just, it is a bit intimidating to know that, you know, you've been away from your wife and she's surrounded by a bunch of guys that she's emotionally,
She's being very vulnerable with them to a level that he hasn't experienced.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, husband. I mean, it's her husband, so it's, I get it from his perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So I know we posted it on our Facebook. It was this, like, video.
This animated video?
Yeah, it's just an audio with, like, this conversation he had with the philosopher Simon Critchley, I think his name is.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about happiness, and he talks about, like, his addiction. Philip Seymour Hoffman, that is. Mm-hmm. And he talks about pleasure, and he talks about his addictions and how he can't be the guy who has just, like, one beer. He gets no pleasure in that. No, one glass of wine. He lived his life in kind of these indulgences. Something that, you know, I guess I can't relate to necessarily.
No. Yeah.
I'm not going to pretend I do. But, I mean, anytime you hear him speak about it, it's pretty heavy. And in this conversation, he says, there is no pleasure that I haven't made myself sick on. And I think you see a lot of that in this Meg Ryan character. So he definitely, like, read this script, and he says, like, I can relate to this.
Yeah, some of the, I mean, you know, just, you see these people, like, a lot of these people that have these tragic experiences, addictions, are larger than life people, just, like, really that know how to, like, enjoy life, like, live it to the fullest, or just adventurous, or just, like, very artistic and very creative, thoughtful individuals.
And they're all kinds of people, and it's not, you know, they're not freaks or anything.
No, but it's just something that tend to be pretty bad for you, have, you know, addictive, you know, qualities to them.
And it's just super unfortunate, and it's so selfish of us to say this, but it's like, we definitely lost this man too early.
Yeah, I mean, one of the saddest things is, I mean, you know, just the fact that he had two young children, and but as you know, from a, I mean, you know, we experienced all the time recently with Carrie Fisher, and you just, you know, go that you're like, man, I want to see more of her entertainment because she's just so talented.
Yeah,
there's just so much more to give.
Yeah,
in his case, like, I can't just, if he was still alive and announced, I'm only going to make a film when I make it with, like, P.T. Anderson. Like, I'd be like, oh, that's kind of silly, but I'd be like, but if that was, we were just going to get a film from him, like, every 4 years, that's still, like, better than nothing, and every performance is just,
yeah,
like, a powerhouse.
And again, you know, there's a man behind this. It's not just, like, the actor. It's not just...
No, it's not a Dance Monkey Dance.
No, you know? But that's how we saw him. That's how we got to enjoy him. I think we're just, and we've said this in the, I think, our first podcast, we're just fortunate that he did give us so much.
He did give us so much, and also to us in particular, at very, like, formidable, like, growing and learning the love and craft of filmmaking.
Of course, yeah, and I'd much rather him be alive for his family than be alive for us to make
great
movies.
Of course, yeah.
But, I mean, it is unfortunate, but it's definitely why I think... it's definitely what attracted him to this film. And it's something that... maybe this was the only role he was supposed to have in this film. Maybe these were his only lines. But I think, you know, he knew he could relate to this. He saw this as a script that was something for him, and he knew he could add to...
And again, I mean, in 94, he made, like, 3 or 4 other films. So, I mean, it wasn't a big role. It was, like, a... 2 days probably he worked on this at most.
True.
And so, and it was a film that its general story just, you know, was meant something to him.
Yeah, maybe he just wanted to be a part of it, even if it was like a small role like this.
Some actors that he wanted to collaborate with.
It's possible. I mean, again, we can only speculate.
Yeah.
However, he does good in his one little line, or one or two little lines.
So, from there, I mean, when she finally gets out, they just, things aren't the same between
them.
And then one doesn't expect, and she even talks to the doctor beforehand, and doctor says that she, you know, she, because the doctor went through rehab herself, and she said that her, she and her husband ended up getting a divorce, and so things aren't the same, so they decide to go to a therapist, and they both say to the therapist that, you know, they're irritated, and Michael even says to the point that he feels manipulated. Like, they both bring up very excellent points. Like, she says she feels, like, belittled.
Yeah, it feels real, you know? Both feel like they have a side to tell here. And it seems like it's something that millions of families go through every year, probably.
And then after that, then we get Philip Seymour Hoffman's next scene where Gary's over. So Andy Garcia comes home, Michael comes home, and they're just kind of, they were just like standing there talking, right? Alice and Gary?
Yeah.
Death. I think I should share this tonight.
Hey. Hey, you remember Gary, right?
Sure.
How's it going?
Good. It's really good. How you doing? You got a great house. You really do. So, yeah. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I'm sorry if I
didn't mean to say anything. Hey, it's not about you, okay? I'm sorry.
Okay, take care.
Slow down.
Thank you so much. Okay.
It's not like we see anything, but again, he just thinks that something might be going on.
It's funny because
he's very mellow about it.
Yeah, she never goes into like who he really is, or or what his deal is. And I guess, you know, there is a privacy element there. But even for our audience,
well, every time the two times we see him, she's always seems very like he comes up to her in the rehab and like, oh, can I take her away for a minute? She always seems very like she's consoling him. So he clearly has like, I thought maybe like, you know, no one came to visit him if that was like Visitor's Day or something.
True. Yeah, he didn't seem to be with anyone. That's perceptive.
Thank you.
Yeah, and this really pisses Andy Garcia off.
Yeah, I mean, she says to him, when I'm scared, he can't help, and he doesn't pretend that he can. So this is like, she's definitely growing as a person. I mean, you know, I mean, she had, for the better, and just really understanding herself that much
more.
Yeah,
just like they're supporting her, she's supporting the people that she's found in her community.
Mm-hmm. And Michael is still yet to. I was kind of surprised. I was watching something recently. I can't recall what. But one of the main, oh, is that Netflix show Love. And he goes to, because the female character in that movie is a alcoholic and like,
in the show?
Yeah, and like sexaholic. She just has a bunch of addictions, vices. And so he goes to
Al-Anon?
A meeting.
So he goes to Al-Anon meetings. Yeah, I haven't seen Love yet. Everyone tells me, "Oh, you gotta watch Love. You gotta watch Love. I'll watch it."
But yeah, he goes to one of those meetings, and you know, to try to help him understand what she's going through, and just hearing what other people are going through with people they love that have addictions. And so just the fact that, I mean, that show is about like a couple that's like in their first like month or two of their relationship. I was just like, man, he hasn't gotten to like a meeting yet. So I mean, it's just something that I think he was still, not that he's in denial, but he just thinks,
no,
like, when she's got the problem.
When he goes to the Al-Anon meeting, he's like, he thinks they're losers. He calls the people they're losers and stuff. And like, you know, blaming themselves, and or they just have, I think he's like crappy spouses and stuff. He just hasn't like bought in yet. One of the big issues she has is
he's just still really angry at her.
He's angry, but he's also
angry at himself.
Angry at himself because he's like, what can I do to help? And I think he needs to understand that sometimes he's not the one who can help.
Yeah.
He can't help her through everything. A lot of it's her journey, and he just kind of has to be there.
He comes home after like his first meeting, And she just says, like, she's having a bad day, and he just doesn't get it. He's just like, can you tell me when this bad day is going to happen? I can work around it. And then, I mean, there's a lot of meaningful dialogue. Let's just, you know what? I think this is a good scene to play.
Is it me?
It's not your problem.
No, it's not my problem. It's my fucking fault. Everything is my fault. My sick wife is not making it in a home environment. Why exactly?
I mean, I am not your problem. I am not your problem to solve. It was so much more fun in the old days, wasn't it, Michael? I'd get drunk, I'd pass out, and you'd put me back together. That was the best, huh? That made you feel good. And that's what hurts.
Tensions are high, and they're just very... They're both very vulnerable and just not... I mean...
I think the best word for him is he's frustrated.
Yeah.
Because, he wants to help, but...
Yeah.
He's not processing this right.
Well, she just wants him to say, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
And he says it, but it's one of those things where...
Yeah. Oh, that changes it right now.
Yeah. And she kind of reveals there, too, that she's not in love with him anymore. Yeah. And this is a very romantic guy, so you can tell that just, like, stabs him in the heart.
Yeah, so, and this kind of gets, so he decides, you know, he's moving out or whatever, and then I just put Q.R.E.M. song, and it's like, Everybody Hurts.
Okay, I was thinking that too,
very
Everybody
emotional,
Hurts.
Very good emotional song, but like, I don't know.
But at the time, it's not that old of a song.
No.
So now we see, like, oh, come on, you know, like, yeah. It's so obvious. But back then, it probably wasn't.
To me, it just kind of... I understand that, like, he's moving out. It's like, it is a breakup song. But to me, it's just, like, still, like, younger person breakup song.
I don't know.
There's just something
maybe,
like,
something you associate with it. But
yeah.
It's a melancholy moment. Like you said, mm-hmm. The music in this, whether it be the score or the songs, they're very, like, telling of, this is how you should feel.
So he's been moved out for, like, at least, like, 4 months or something like that?
Yeah, so like you said, he moves out, and he's just really questioning what his role is. He gets up in the Al-Anon meetings, and he's kind of, you know, being more open to it.
Well, he says
talking.
That's why I wrote down 4 months, that he's been there for 4 months, but this is the first time he decides to talk. Mm-hmm. And he put, you know, and, his, like, this is where he's finally... saying kind of what she was saying to him, and I think, like, living to his biggest fears, because he says, maybe she never needed me as much as I thought she needed me. And that's, you know, she says to him several times, like, oh, you like, you know, taking care of me at the end of the night, like, you like that aspect of me. And so he comes, you know, to terms with that.
Essentially, yeah, and they, like you said, time passes. And they bump into each other as Amy, Lauren Tom, has her baby, and I guess they both visit her in the hospital at the same time.
You know, we think at this point, oh, maybe they're going to get back together.
Yeah, because she seems open to it. She was always the one who you were more worried about, like, that this wasn't working out. Mm-hmm. Not because of her. It is her problem, yes.
Yeah.
But she's the one who said she didn't love him, for example.
Yeah. But then he's, just because we see through, while she was in rehab, just like things with work aren't going that great, and
no, they're so cutting pilots.
They're
or
cutting
something.
Pilots. He's like saying to his daughter at one point, like, oh, they're gonna be getting, like, you know, younger pilots in there, so he has to take a gig where he's based out of Denver. Ugh, boy, San Francisco to Denver. That's a
what? I mean, people love Denver. People move to Colorado, like, in waves.
Yeah,
I don't know. I guess it's a bigger airport. Well, maybe not at the time. I'm not sure. Regardless, this is an airport chat. You can listen to our next podcast about that.
So many spin-off podcasts.
Regardless, yeah. So she's like, you could tell this is, she sees him, and she's like, maybe this is time to just try again, start again. And it seems like he's
drops,
like,
the Denver bomb on
he's
her.
He's given up, essentially.
Drops the Rocky Mountains on her.
He's given up.
Yeah. And then, honestly, then it's just like a big, because she says to him, oh, I want you to come to this meeting. And then he, you know, says the whole damn thing.
Yeah, she's 6 months sober.
Yeah.
And he wants her to come to her speech, and he kind of implies that he's not going to go.
Yeah.
Before that, before he decides to leave, he has to say goodbye to his daughters.
Yeah.
And, I mean,
well,
that's...
The younger one doesn't really get it, but the older one calls
it,
him Michael, is just like...
It's very touching.
And... but he, you know, he decides to go. That's, I mean, I guess in the end, he needs to be away from that. Probably doesn't want to be away from his daughters, but yeah, also work-wise, that's how he's going to make money.
But you could tell it, work is the reason, but there are other reasons. If they were still in, you know, family unit and everything was going well, he would try harder to stay in San Francisco.
Or if they were,
or maybe move out to Denver.
They would all move to Denver. Sure.
And I just want to touch on the conversation with the older daughter again, Tina.
Mm-hmm.
She even says to him, like, this is like, she recognizes him as her father, even though she doesn't call him father, she still calls him Michael. And she basically says, like, are you going to come visit me, or are you only visiting me because my sister is your real daughter? And he makes it very clear there that
you're like, my daughter.
He feels equal love for the two daughters. And that, this is where I think Andy Garcia really shines. Like, you could tell there that he's like, maybe moving to Denver isn't the best decision.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's something I have to do, but...
Which, so, then cut to, like, after that, then, the final scene is at her six-month sobriety meeting, and she gives this, you know, great speech, just like she's up there, you know, open heart and everything like that, wearing her heart on her sleeve.
Yeah, you could tell Meg Ryan here.
Talking about her lowest point, which, as we said, you know, is like that day where she, you know, hits her daughter in the shower, and then, like, you know.
Yeah, and she feels it. Like, she's doing a great job here, I think.
But she misses him, and she says how, you know.
She wishes away. She could have a second chance. And like I said, she's crying here. I mean, she's tearing up.
Yeah.
And it feels real. And, like, good for her. Like, you connect here. Even though, again, a little corny, but not the speech, not the performance.
Yeah. But then when she gets off the stage, her peers are congratulating her, saying, you know, very moving, you know, like, speech and everything. And then it's kind of a, it's very similar scene to the beginning. Like, we obviously know that she and Michael are, you know, were a couple and, like, know one another, so it doesn't have that impact of the beginning scene. But he comes up and just describes her, but not, you know.
Like, yeah, so the big surprise is that he's actually there.
Yeah, heard her speak.
Kind of weird surprise. Philip Seymour Hoffman's character is not there.
Yeah.
What's the deal with that?
That's why it, like, leads me to believe there's, like, I don't know, maybe, like, there was just another scene where, like, he and Alice had a falling out.
Or maybe he gets back into rehab. Maybe he has a lapse. Or maybe maybe she still had hope that he would show up, and he didn't want to, he didn't want to ruin that.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's disappointing because, like, you see that they've gotten pretty close. Obviously, she's going to his house.
And, like, yeah, and then Michael could have had some nice words with Gary, like, oh, I was a jerk. Like, I hope, like, you were, you know.
Yeah, and you don't see that, which is odd and disappointing. But again,
no closure, unfortunately.
Maybe that was shot on a way different day and it didn't fit with Philip Seymour Hoffman's schedule. It could even be that as well. So they're just like, whatever. I don't know.
But
regardless.
Yeah, but Michael's there and says some very, like, kind and passionate words about his wife and just obviously what he understands now, what his role needs to be and should be for her as far as supporting. And they, you know, just, I mean, they share a very passionate kiss, and we're assuming that either they'll become a family again in the San Francisco or Denver area.
She talks about getting that second chance, and it's very clear that she's getting a second chance. And he is too, though. He is too. He's getting a second chance to...
Kind of thought Percy Sledge's When a Man Loves a Woman was going to kick
him. Yeah, you only get it at the beginning. Sorry, yeah. Kyle. Do you think that was the original title of this film?
No, the original title was Significant Other.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of a bland... I mean, not that When a Man Loves a Woman is like...
No, also a bland title, but there's a song with that one.
Yeah, there's a famous song that definitely probably helps pull some audience members in. But I was thinking about a little bit more, like, it's... You know, there's a choice to be made there, and that's When a Man Loves a Woman. And I think that really is, like, you know... He always loves... You know, she kind of falls out of love with him.
Yeah.
He always loves her.
But I don't blame her. She's really focusing on herself.
No, I get it. I'm not, like, nothing... I mean, I can't imagine, like, what one goes through in those moments.
No.
You know, self-questioning. And if you're questioning yourself, how do you even know what else is true? You know, I think that that's, like, an important thing towards the title, even plays towards his character.
Gotcha. I mean, it's true.
Yeah.
So did you like the film?
Yeah, I liked it. I don't know if I'm going to watch it again anytime soon.
Yeah, but... this isn't something I would probably watch again, only because it's heavy. but not heavy enough where I'm like, I need to see this again to...
Yeah.
This was fairly a hit when it came out.
Okay.
It was number two at the box office to The Crow.
The Crow, yeah.
Dark film, different kind of heavy, dark film. Yeah. Heavy-handedness. Wow, what a depressing Friday to go to the theater.
We're going to get a, I think, a reboot. They've been talking reboot of The Crow for a while
for
now.
Years.
So maybe we'll get a reboot of When a Man,
Loves a Woman to come out the same day.
So we need someone to, you know, not the Michael Bolton. We need someone from today to cover When a Man Loves a Woman.
Yeah, and then they'll use the Michael Bolton because that would be
the
older one.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I think I agree with you. I don't know if I'll see this film again. I mean, I don't know if I can even recommend this film if you're a Philip Seymour Hoffman fan, because he's in it so little.
Yeah.
But it's not... If you're someone who suffers from alcoholism or addiction, or you know someone who does, maybe check it out.
It's a poignant piece.
Yeah, maybe check it out and let us know if it actually does communicate to you.
Yeah.
Or if, like, oh, this is bullshit. This is all, like, you know, this is... This is what it looks like in the movies, but it has nothing to do with like how it looks in real life.
Yeah.
That's completely acceptable. Like I said, I don't know. You said you might have a little bit more experience than me, but I know you don't know firsthand.
No, I mean, it wasn't like nearly... I didn't like see the stuff that they portrayed in that movie.
Yeah, so I mean, we'd love to hear from
everyone
you.
Everyone experiences different, you know, scenarios.
Obviously, it doesn't have to be public. You can, you know, privately tell us. Even tell us if you're passing us on the street. You know,
it's weird street conversation.
It is a weird street conversation. But I mean, I'm very curious to see like how close to reality Meg Ryan's experience, or even Andy Garcia's experience.
Well, next episode when we bring her on, we'll...
That'd be great. We get Meg Ryan, but we don't bring her on this episode.
We bring her
on next week's episode.
So what is next week's episode?
So next week's episode is Nobody's Fool, a Paul Newman film.
Paul Newman.
I had not seen it.
I think I've seen parts of this film.
Really? Okay, that's good.
Philip Seymour Hoffman plays a cop.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Hopefully next week we get a little bit more of Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yes. I know just even from like the trailer and scenes that I recall him in, we do. But not any film. Like, unless Philip Seymour Hoffman isn't in a film, we're going to get like a role of his that's more than what this film gave us.
I would think so.
Yeah.
I don't think he has like a walk-on role in something.
Yeah.
That's IMDb worthy. Maybe a TV show or something, but we are only doing feature films on this podcast. So we're still sifting through all your responses for what our closing line should be.
Yes.
Some have been a little profane, so we're not going to go through those, but we'll pick a good one soon. But for now, I guess we just have the old goodbye.
Yep.
Happy trails.
Happy trails to you.
I think someone did that already.
Oh.
Is that from something?
I don't think so. I don't know. Keep it crispy.
What?
That's from Pete Holmes' podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Big Pete Holmes guy.
Yep. All right, bye, people. Where did you come from? Sex a thing, sex a thing, you.